Welcome to CougarCast with Keith Schertz and Tosh McIntosh. CougarCast, covering BYU football and basketball. Email the show, cougarcast@gmail.com, and follow on Twitter at CougarCast.
Greetings, my name is Keith Schertz, and I am with the 2002 Daily Herald Utah County Name of the Year, Tosh McIntosh. Tosh, how was Thanksgiving? We had a long break from the show.
We did. Yeah, Thanksgiving was great. You went on some Disney adventures for a couple weeks.
Yep.
And, I mean, life is good. Having a baby any day now. But then also, we've had some roller coaster basketball weeks since we've last done a pod.
I'm sorry, but you know, with the name of the year, obviously, I'm not going to make you reveal, you know, what you're thinking there. But with your imagination, you've got some crazy ones. But how about wife vetoes? The names you like, but you know that it's been vetoed.
So Mackin McIntosh.
Mackin.
That's she.
You would actually go for that.
Yeah, that would be my number one name.
Tosh McIntosh.
Tosh with the son Mackin.
With the son.
But my wife will not hear it. So that's probably been vetoed the most times is Mackin. But a lot of them I just bring up just to get a rise out of my wife.
Like sure.
She really thinks I want to name Champ. But in real, I would never really do that. But I'm a person that likes reactions. So I throw a lot of names at her just for pure reactions too. But shit, there's a family named Dredge, and I always bring up that another just reaction to
Dredge. Oh gosh.
Anyway, I love.
She's a Kansas girl, right? So you could
Oklahoma. So same.
Oh, I'm
close.
Sorry.
No, that's not that big of a difference.
Oklahoma. Oh, so boy, you should just like Longhorn.
Yeah, I mean country.
You could.
No, but you know Tulsa. It's a city.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Anyway, I love crazy biblical names. Melchizedek, Ebenezer.
Sure.
But none of those are going to happen either. We got some names that are on the hot list that we're still debating, actually. But I'm not going to throw those out there. But those are some vetoed names already that I.
All right, Mackin McIntosh not happening, but that would be quite something. I think you guys would have the name family names of the year. That would be on lockdown for a little while, I think. But anyway, it's been a crazy basketball season. 10 games into it, Tosh. And we haven't been able to do shows every week. We want to do them more frequently about the basketball team. My biggest regret is I actually had it in me, and I know that we talked about this, so you can back me up, but I actually was scared of UVU before the season.
Yeah, and I laughed at you.
I was scared of that game. And
I don't know how you saw that coming at all. They were terrible last year, and all of a sudden they're decent. They're not as good as they should not have beat us.
No, well, they had a hot night.
They're a legitimate D1 team for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, but if you get hot from the 3-point arc, you know, crazy things can happen, and they were certainly hot that night.
That's sad though that right now in a 7-3 season so far,
the big game
that is the thing that's on everyone's mind is that we lost to UVU.
But that's the defining game of this first 10 games. Like I mean, of the. You know, after the Colorado game the other night, I was having a conversation, and I was talking with a friend of mine. We were talking about, are we good or are we not good? Like, I couldn't figure it out, so I was just asking, like, what do you think? Are we good or are we not good?
We've only beat one good team. Colorado's the only good team we've beat.
Princeton's not bad.
They're okay.
But the thing is like, I don't know what their record is, but I would assume that they're okay. The thing is, though, is... the answer was right there, though, Tosh. If I'm not sure if we're good or we're not good after 10 games, like, I think that tells us that we're not that good.
Princeton is 4-4.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, Colorado's the only good team we've beat. But I think anyone who's watched these games can see our potential. And that's where I'm still at. We have a ton of talent on the floor. If it can mesh, we could still make some magic happen to take.
And that's the thing. They've got a lot of season left to really kind of put it together. And they also, you know, the conference schedule starts out kind of favorably for BYU. I don't think we see Gonzaga till February. But we do get a crack at St. Mary's here in January. But, you know, I was just thinking, Tosh, like, that being the defining game of the season, I mean, it's one of those things where a team came in, they scored 114 points in the Marriott Center in regulation. You know, there's nights where it goes wrong. 18 three-pointers made against you. I mean, that's just the way it is. But I also kind of felt like, man, that team was – I mean, that was a hungry team. That was their Super Bowl game.
Totally.
And they were playing a bunch of guys that thought that all they needed to do was just step on the floor and it was over. And anyway, that was kind of interesting. But, yeah, one win. Tosh, the freshman, obviously, nine new players on this team that were not on the team last year.
That's a ton.
Outside of Eric Mika, okay, the new additions – who do you think's been the most impactful, or who do you have the most hope around, or that you like the most?
So, two different answers there. Out of the nine new guys, the number one that I think's been the best in the first 10 games is Yoey Childs. Mm. From a consistency standpoint,
he hasn't gotten in as many fouls as I thought he might.
No, you thought he was going to break Austin's record.
Yeah, I did.
But no, he's played smart every game. He has boarded well. He's been able to be effective offensively down low. He's a good defender, and I think he's a good inside, and he's even showing spurts of being a pretty good perimeter defender. Yoey Childs is my best performer out of the new guys' first 10 games. The one that I
think outside of Eric.
Yes, out of the new guys, yeah. The one that I think is going to be the best for us in the future is Haas. I think TJ Haas he's even rivaling Mika, I think, in brightest basketball future. I'm still on the TJ Haas train, but he's definitely had more growing pains. And it makes sense. Yoey Childs was playing basketball last year, being the state MVP. You know, TJ Haas, I don't remember where he was, but he was not...
France.
Yeah, he was not in a basketball sort of shape a year ago.
No. And, you know, and getting your shot back and getting everything together, it does. It takes some time. It makes me move to my next thing. You know, this is the latest in the season, Tosh, that I think we've been in this. We're 10 games in the regular season, okay? I know this because I've been tracking it, okay? 103 different lineups have been employed by Dave Rose in the first 10 games. 103. And the reason I bring that up is because I do not think this is the longest into the season that I can remember where Dave Rose hasn't been able to locate or find what it is that he wants to do with his group to try to win basketball games. Like, I think he has some ideas, obviously, Eric Mika and working through Mika and doing things like that. They want to do that, obviously. But they haven't found a way to unlock Nick Emery. We still haven't gotten TJ Haas comfortable. And so the rotations, you know, and how he wants to bring people in and out. Is LJ Rose at the one the right choice? Or do you need to get the ball in the hands of TJ Haas at the one? That wing position, which we knew was going to be a problem following the last season, it's still a problem. You know, I mean, Davin Gwynn has been somebody that we've looked to try to fulfill that, and he had a couple nice games, but he's not a long-term solution, and I don't think that he should be playing as many minutes as he's playing now, contrary to popular belief. Actually, after 10 games, he's one of the highest approval rating players on this team, and I don't really see it.
Well, it's all about expectations. He's exceeded people's expectations. But the guy's ceiling is not as high as many of these players that have been, you know, subpar on our expectations. And so that's where – but I agree with you. We need to find a D1 scholarship player to be able to
– play the wing.
Play the wing position. I actually think we need to go with three bigs. Like, I think that's the direction that we need to go to take advantage of this team's strengths.
Sure. According to Synergy Sports, all the data indicates that this is the first time in Dave Rose's tenure where BYU has been a better half-court offense team than they have been a transition team. Now, I know, I am aware that BYU has Synergy statistics, okay? They subscribe to them and have their service, as does CougarCast. Hacha. But one of the things that I wanted to just bring to light with that is, I mean, think about that, Tosh. In transition, BYU is one of the worst transition teams in America, okay? They were in the 300s. There's 351 Division I basketball teams. Last I checked, BYU was 306th in transition offense. We were shooting less than 40%. We were like 39.3% in transition shooting. That's 3 points and two-pointers and everything. We are shooting far better in half-court offense. We come away with more points per possession in half-court offense. And so it's fair to wonder, Tosh, especially with the strength, and like you brought it up with the bigs, maybe we just need to slow down.
Totally. No, I think my observations of when we're good versus when we're bad. When we're good, we're playing inside-out basketball. We're throwing it into the bigs on almost every possession. On games that we're doing that, we're winning all of those games. When we're trying to just throw it around and we're launching bad threes from deep, like, we're losing those games. The other thing that I think builds into half-court, when we become a half-court offense and lockdown half-court defense team, obviously, whenever you become a good defensive team, you win. But those are my only two observations that I start yelling at my screen when I can tell this is going to be a rough night, is when we're not throwing the ball into the bigs or when we're not getting after it on man-to-man defense.
Kyle Collinsworth, in terms of ball movement, that right there, what you described is that's the impact of Kyle Collinsworth not being on the team anymore.
Yeah. No, he's great. I mean,
is finding people in comfortable spots where they're going to get open looks and good shots, and getting defenses to kind of contract and expand and move in certain ways. That's something that's part of the wizardry of Kyle Collinsworth that's missing from this team this year, and it can't happen because one playmaker anymore. It has to be a team effort. And so that's kind of an interesting thing. And you and I, before the podcast, we got talking about that. Team effort is kind of one of those things that's interesting. Is there a Jimmer effect where what's happened is everyone saw how fun it was to watch Jimmer Fredette and how Dave Rose was ready to let this guy be ball dominant and let him shoot and fire away and be this just crazy playmaker that went to the line, that drove to the hoop and shot deep threes and just lit the Marriott Center on fire. And it feels like now we've got a lot of guys on this team that want to be that guy who's the freewheeling, ball-in-their-hands guy, and not enough guys that are ready to play a role and to do it. And that probably explains Davin Gwynn's approval rating, because here's a guy, he's happy to be a role player.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree with both of your points. I actually think, and I'm the biggest Jimmer fan you'll find, but I think there's been some negatives in the post-Jimmer era of players thinking it's okay to shoot bad threes. It wasn't a bad three when Jimmer shot it because he made them. But now we have guys missing those. We had Carlino would shoot those. Emery shoots those. Like, I'm not afraid to say.
Fisher had games where
those guys are good players, but they shoot threes that almost any other coach in the nation would pull him out of the game for. But we've hopefully we're trending.
Well, that's the thing with the Dave Rose offense. Like, you've got to hit threes. And as a team, we were shooting less than 30% before the Colorado game. We're now just above 30% as a team.
But I thought there was really no bad threes taken in the Colorado. We got back to where we were shooting open threes, where we were relatively close to the three-point line.
Right.
You know, kind of your standard threes, and when we got back to those, all of a sudden we started making them again.
There was an energy and a detail and kind of a purpose behind their play against Colorado that sometimes is lost with these guys. They knew they needed to play hard and to bring it in order to win that game, and there's just a different energy level with that group. And that can be just their inexperience. They're young. Right, but I'd like to see them compete on the same way that they did against that Colorado team. You know, there's been games like USC. It seemed like they were they got up early and then they thought, well, we're going to be fine. And then suddenly it was like they forgot that they needed to play hard. You know, and that how much of is it, you know, any frustrations that you have with the team, how much of that can be explained away just that we're young? The leader of this team is a sophomore. Nick Emery's expected to be kind of the leader of the team, and he's a sophomore.
There's a lot of things that people can get away with in high school that they think, this is how I play, this is who I am, and then they get to college, and that stuff doesn't work anymore. And we very much so are dealing with some of those things, where I think these players are dang good.
Yeah.
They're still just figuring out what will work at this level of basketball and habits that they have that they cannot get away with doing that crap at this level.
And that's, you know, that's the thing that I have kind of, that'll bring in to my point. You know, Dave Rose has had a very successful run at BYU. This team is 7-3. It may sound like it's worse than that, but given the fact that we've got one quality win on our schedule and one really bad loss on our schedule, you sit there and you think, like, well, the non-conference has done nothing to help us, and now you're starting to look at it and think, geez, do we got to go win one in Spokane again? Do we got to sweep St. Mary's? What do we have to do? You know, we've left ourselves, it feels like, Tosh, that we've left ourselves zero room for one of the silly slip-up games against Pacific or against whoever. We don't have that space anymore. We have to just roll through the West Coast Conference and be clinical about it in the way that championship teams do that. And that's too much to ask, isn't it, of this group, probably?
It's a lot to ask. I think this is a very talented team. The thing, I'm going to steal a stat that I saw from Greg Rebell, but that made me laugh. So right now, 10 games in, we're 7-3. Our record every single year for the last 5 years, 10 games in, has been 7-3.
That's interesting.
And every single year, we have these same things of, man, we lose. Every game we need to win, we lose.
But Tosh, where we've been every single year, though, the last 5 years? Not West Coast Conference champions, and we've been on the bubble.
A bubble team. Yeah. And we're heading there again.
Yeah.
That's where I don't think the sky is falling. I don't think that we did ourselves any great services in this non-conference either.
Sure.
But we are where we've always been, and that we need to win a couple games against St. Mary's and Gonzaga, and that we are going to be a bubble team at the end of this season.
So there it is, everybody. We're the exact same. So now we've got all these four-star recruits, and we're in the same spot. So that's kind of interesting. But this is the thing that I want to get at. And we mentioned the youth. And, you know, Tosh, this has been a little pet peeve of mine. I've been complaining about this for a long time now. You know this is my corner to die on. And I feel lonely on it. So maybe I can get some of our listeners on my side on this one. You know what I'm sick of? And maybe it's fans taking their cues from kind of the culture Dave Rose has put together there with the program. I don't know. But for whatever reason, it seems like there are only a few people that actually matter. And then everybody else who's on the team. So there's like four players that matter. And then everybody else on the team is inconsequential. And so if you're not one of the Lone Peak Three or Yoli Childs, okay, then it doesn't matter if you're healthy or not. So Elijah Bryant gets hurt. And people are like, well, no, it's not a big deal. Not a big deal. Kyle Davis's minutes need to go down. He misses a couple of games.
And he's not practicing.
And I see all over Twitter within conversations that I'm it's no big deal. That doesn't hurt us. Isaac Nielsen transfers to Utah Valley. That won't matter, Tosh. It would be pretty nice to have a guy that he's averaging a double-double over there for Utah Valley. I mean, I think he had like 25-17 or something against BYU when they played us. Like, Isaac Nielsen's a pretty good player. I'm not saying that, like, he's better than Eric Mika, even though he beat up on Eric Mika. What I'm saying is that having that depth, that helps. Having a healthier Kyle Davis who can give you more than 12 minutes a night, that matters. when we lose Jordan Chapman, people said the same. And this, you know, you'll agree with me on this at least, is that the Jordan Chapman, when it didn't work out with the law school, and so then he had to go to Boston College. You know, there's a lot of people who are like, well, it won't matter because, hey, look, we've got TJ Haas coming in. And so we don't, and Elijah Bryant's going to be available. And I sit there and I think, like, yeah, but, like, I'm, no offense, but we're playing two walk-ons as the three for a lot of our minutes.
And Jordan Chapman
between Bayo and Gwynn.
Best defender,
yeah,
man defender last year.
Like, this year he's shooting 44% from three. He's shooting 93% from the free throw line. 7 points a game on, he's averaging 20. He plays 20 minutes a game for Boston College. He's getting 7 points and three boards. I mean, he's a valuable player. You bring him in, and he was happy to be a role player. What I'm saying is...
Oh, one more here. Frank Bartley's the craziest
Frank
one.
Frank Bartley!
Frank Bartley leaves, no one cares, and tell us what Frank Bartley...
Yeah, Frank Bartley the fourth. He's down there at Louisiana Lafayette, okay? And I understand, it's maybe his competition level's different, okay? Dude is shooting 47% from three. He's averaging 20 points a game. He gets 3.5 assists a game, okay? And he's their star player. And I sit there and I think to myself, is Frank Bartley Jr., who would have had, this would have been his senior year, so 3 years of experience under Dave Rose and how to run his offense, would he be better equipped to help BYU this year than LJ Rose? I think he might have been. Maybe. I don't know that. We don't know. But the point is
got some minutes at the three.
Having depth matters, and having these guys that are really good matter. Right now we're playing two guys that are only on scholarship because we've let everybody walk. Jake Toulson should be on this team. He's not here. I don't know all the reasons why everybody left. Corey Calvert was playing well enough in the NIT run that year. He started playing the majority of the point guard minutes over Matt Carlino. He was Mr. Colorado. He was a good three-star recruit, almost cracking top 150 in terms of recruiting ratings. And we let him walk, and everyone's like, eh. You know. But we're playing Davin Gwynn and Stephen Bayo. Walk-ons who only have scholarships because everybody else left. You can't lose good players and have it not matter. Jacob Hartsock, you know, decided to leave for personal reasons. He's not playing anywhere else. He started a couple games. He was valuable. You got to keep good players. And I don't know what the problem is around BYU or with Dave Rose, or if we told everybody that it was all Lone Peak 3 all day, and as soon as TJ Haas came in, he was going to start, and that was just where we were going. It didn't matter how good you were, how hard you practiced. As soon as TJ Haas walked on campus, he was going to play. I don't know if those were the conversations. I know that was the impression that I felt. Is that how you felt in the last couple of years?
Well, everyone, and it might even not have been from, every fan's been looking forward to these Lone Peak guys. And so even if it wasn't pressure from within the program, they were hearing that sort of, those sort of things from friends and family, roommates.
So here's what I'm saying, folks. Can we just adjust this real quick? Can we start caring when good players get hurt? When Kyle Davis gets hurt, can we not be like, when Elijah Bryant's not available, we're going to be okay. When people transfer, when Ryan Andrus comes back from his mission and he looks at his options and maybe goes to UVU, or if he decides to transfer, can we say, oh, shoot, we might be able to use him? Like, not everyone's going to be a freshman and come in and just, like, dominate. Like, I mean, Nick Emery came in and he was great as a freshman. Mika came in, he was good as a freshman. But that's not what usually is the case. And you need, and this, here's the last one, Tosh. You need seniors. You got to have guys that have been there, that have leadership, that have ways to do it. And I think we're seeing some of that inexperience in the level which they compete each night, and we've run into some problems because we are very weak on the experience side, and that part of that is because we've let a lot of people walk away. All right, rant over.
It was a good rant, and I've got two kind of quick feedback thoughts on it. One, I think a lot of it why BYU fans say they don't care. It's not an intellectual sort of well thought out don't care. It's that
it is what it is? Is that
fans,
sort of where...
I think fans want to be optimistic. And if we're going to go one step deeper, you know, we've got a lot of people in our fan base that are really people that want to just have faith and think, oh, everything is going to be okay. And I think that there's that aspect that that they're looking for ways to convince themselves, hey, this is going to be fine. And I do that too. I think that is what, but you bring up some points. We could use some of those guys this year for depth and for leadership. I also want to say that I think part of why we've had that and that why I still give Dave Rose a pass is we've had some of the best recruiting classes in the BYU modern era.
Yeah, that's great.
And that there's going to be shrapnel, I think, when we have, I believe, 5 top 100 guys on this team.
Yeah.
That there's going to have to be some of those stories. And some of those guys are going to pan out to be good that end up, we move it out to get the room for those guys. But so I still, if Dave Rose is pulling in top 100 players, I'll still give him a pass for guys that leave the program.
I understand that thought, but what I'm saying is doesn't it also sort of derail things? Great, we've got four four-star guys in our starting lineup who are on the floor a lot of night for most of the minutes, most nights, between Childs, Mika, Haas, and Emery. And then the guy that's playing next to him is a walk-on.
Which, I'm not as anti-walk-on as you, but our walk-ons right now, I think Bayo, Gwynn plays hard. I actually think Bayo is going to be a player. I think that in 3 years, that Bayo's a guy that we're all just going to think, oh man, that guy can really play.
It's possible. But you get what I'm saying. It's like, at the same time, it's like, it it may not even be that they're walk-ons. It's just the experience factor. You know, it's a freshman and a sophomore instead. So, anyway, that's been one of the frustration points for me is this team has desperately needed leadership from somebody that's been within the program. Like, I know LJ Rose is a captain and he's like a super senior, but like, no, like that he can't. I just have a hard time believing that your big leader of the team is going to be the graduate transfer.
Yeah,
I just don't see. I don't see that. Anyway, Tosh. You went on a little rant of your own about zone defense.
I'll rant on that to anybody who will listen. That our team this year cannot play zone defense. And I don't know if it's personnel. I think part of it is this. Here's what it is. I do know what it is. Zone defense at its core is not as good as man defense. Zone is a way to try to get by if you don't have guys that can stay with their man. Man is always better if you can play it. But
sometimes you got to hide people, though, Tosh.
Correct. And that's what zone is good for. It also, zone works the best if you have length and athleticism.
Right.
Because there's always holes in the zone. But if you have length and athleticism, it really minimizes and hides those holes in the zone. This year's team...
It takes a lot of communication as well. Zone defense, in order for it to be really effective, like everyone's got to move. If I take a step this way, you've got to move too. Everybody's got to kind of organically kind of like amoeba their way around the court. and if you don't do that, it's really hard to be effective. And again, I think it's a leadership thing.
Our guards,
Eric Mika isn't in a position to be the man in the middle on the zone defense.
These are all young guys and we've never been this style of zone team before, and our guards are short. Like, our guards are athletic, but our guards are short, and we are getting eaten up. When we play zone, teams can pass the ball around, and without fail, they will get a wide open three. And they're hitting them, like when we lose games. Versus against Colorado, the first time that I watched this team and thought, man, this team can really play defense for a whole game. We didn't play any zone. Like, we go to man again. We have a man-to-man team. And that when we play man-to-man, everyone on our team plays hard on defense. It's the first time in a long time we've been able to say that. Let's just let them do it. And that's my rant.
Can I disagree with you just for a half second?
Of course.
Everyone plays hard on this team on defense.
Who doesn't?
All of them have had moments. Okay, what I'm saying is there's nights where they're engaged and there's nights when they're not.
But I would say the nights that they're not is when they're in zone and they just start giving up threes. I think it's harder to stay engaged and take pride when you're in zone.
Yeah,
if you're man to man and your man's beating you, if you're competitive at all, you know it's on you and you're fighting back. These guys, I think, in our zone, they start blaming other people and they become disengaged.
They've done a nice job recently, especially against Colorado, so very recently. They did a nice job rotating on their doubles whenever they've doubled the post. Sure. There's been a nice job of kind of that help team defense. Anyway, it's an interesting thought, and it's been a long time. So it's interesting, right? Everything's kind of gone against the recent trends. We've usually been a better zone defense team than man-to-man defense team, but this season, for 2016-17, it appears to have flipped. We've usually been a better transition team than a half-court offense team. But for this season, it's flipped. And that's what I mean, and when I said it near the beginning of the show, I'm just not sure Dave Rose has quite figured out what it is that they want to do to win, or he's uncomfortable with it. And so because of that, like, the only one that seems real comfortable when they're out on the floor are the front court guys, because I feel like they know they have their direct objective of what it is that they're supposed to do out there. And so Yoli and Eric and Kyle Davis are all being pretty effective. Aites goes in there and has nice minutes. And I feel like the bigs are really clear on what it is that they're supposed to be doing when they're out there. And I feel like all of the guards and all that stuff have kind of struggled to find what it is that they're supposed to be doing each night. Totally. Would you agree? Or I mean,
100%. I'm a big proponent of, I think we need to play three bigs, two guards. Like, I could go on another rant there, but for time won't. But I'm all in that we need to be going more big heavy. Let's look forward to Illinois, our last remaining, I think, well, not just from facts standpoint, our last remaining tier A or B game in non-conference is Illinois. And then let's even peek even further ahead a little bit and give some thoughts on WCC play.
Sure. So Illinois 8-3, and we will be playing them, I believe, in the United Center. So we're right in Chicago. This will be a big recruiting game for Illinois. They actually have quite a bit at stake. You know, they get to play right there in their hotbed of where they recruit. Their biggest struggle with this program is if they can keep the local kids around, they're going to be great.
Yeah,
they just have a hard time doing that. They're a team that is on the rise. I believe they've had a coaching change within the last couple years. But anyway, I do think that Illinois, obviously, Big Ten team, and has had seasons where they've been really put together. But they had a little rough stretch earlier this year. But they've won four in a row, Tosh, coming into this. But for you and me, we just kind of think the key with BYU and with everything with BYU is, can we hit shots? It's just shot making. As simple as, you know, we try to complicate basketball, but it's really simple for BYU. We take a lot of threes, and if our shot making's good from three, we are a nightmare. We're very difficult to beat.
And so far we've only had maybe two games that we've shot pretty well.
Yeah, I think that we haven't had a night where we really felt like, man, these guys are really getting it going and really shooting. And Colorado was close, and that helped. And what, Princeton? Would that be the other night where we did okay?
Yeah, exactly.
So our two big wins. So, and against Valpo and some of the other, you know, against USC, we didn't have good shooting. Is it that simple, Tosh, against Illinois? If we shoot 42% or better from three, are we in shape?
Oh, totally. If we shoot over 40% from three, I think we're running away from them because our bigs are dang good. I think
that's the point that we need to talk about. By the way,
we're going
to
play that might have better bigs than us. Everyone else on our schedule, we will dominate bigs versus bigs.
I think you're underestimating St. St. Mary's big guys, but that's okay.
Like, I underestimate. I
you don't like St. Mary's. You just don't like them.
I don't believe in St. Mary's.
But St. Mary's is good. I will say, because St. Mary's is big guys. Anyway, I've seen them have good nights. But the point is you're right, though. We have very talented big guys. One of the things that's been huge for this team this year, offensively, offensive rebounds have been gigantic this year, Tosh. We're averaging almost 8 points a game on the offensive glass. Okay, almost 10% of our points come from just crashing offensive boards and getting in that way. BYU, I think, is like +7 on the rebound differential on average this year. I think that makes them one of the 25 best teams in America for rebounding differential. So we're rebounding the heck out of that basketball.
It's the Mika effect.
Yoli as well.
And for sure, yeah. Yoli. But Mika as a freshman broke our offensive rebounding record.
Right.
And so that guy crashes specifically the offensive boards hard. But, yeah, what you brought up, right now, actually, Yoli is beating Mika in rebounds per minute. That he's getting 0.33, so a third of a rebound per minute he plays. Mika gets 0.3.
Right.
And then Davis is 0.2. 0.2 is decent.
Right.
Mika and Yoli are elite rebounders.
Well, if you think about it, 30-second shot clock, okay, that Yoli number. So 0.33, right? So one out of every three possessions.
No, 1 minute. I think that's based on minute.
That's what possession. I'm saying, though.
Yeah, you're right.
What I'm saying is if you have a 30-second shot clock and it goes both ways, it's three possessions. At one out of every three possessions, Yoli's bringing down the ball.
Yeah.
At least it won't, either on offense or defense.
Well, because he can jump out of the gym and he's got a crazy good wingspan. We're going divergent here for a second, but I actually think Yoli, Mika is incredible, but because of Yoli, we're going to have at least somebody, a down low presence to throw the ball to that's awesome rebounder defender for at least 4 more years. Yoli is a man child.
You don't think he might leave early?
I think Mika is more likely to leave early than Yoli.
Yeah, I think you're right. I have a story about that, but we'll leave it for you
another day.
For another day. We won't leave the listeners out of that, but maybe we'll bring that up another time. All right, so just downtown shooting and then a continuing dominance on that on the glass. But it's hard to imagine Eric Mika not getting to 10 points in a game this year. The way that he's going to the line, the way that he's doing everything, it's just hard to imagine him being having a really, really rough night, except for, you look at Karnowski at Gonzaga. That scares you a bit. Tosh, quick. West Coast Conference coming up quickly. WCC play coming up. I have two quick questions. So you have the four games against teams that are in the top 15, St. Mary's and Gonzaga. Two at home, two on the road. What will BYU's record be against St. Mary's and Gonzaga this year?
2-2.
More importantly, when BYU then plays against the other six teams in the West Coast Conference, okay, of those 12 games, how many losses are going to come in those 12 games? Because we've tended to lose 3 or even 4.
I'm going 2.
So you think we're going to do a little better in West Coast Conference play. So you're believing in the process. We're growing. We're getting together. And Dave Rose is getting things straight. And everyone's roles are getting ironed out.
And that our competitive advantage is more consistent than it has been in years past. I think the reason we've lost to bad teams in the past is that our competitive advantage was hitting the three-point shot. Where our competitive advantage now
is we're more of a Swiss Army knife now.
And our real thing is rebounding and low post play.
Yeah.
That is a more consistent game-to-game-to-game thing. So I think we have less of that, like, how the heck did we lose that WCC loss? But I'm still not – we're not as good as – the Zags.
The only thing
that our WCC thing is that the Zags are freaking good.
They're amazing. I saw them in person down in Orlando, and it was like an oh my gosh, this is not happening against this group this year. All right, Tosh. Well, thank you very much. This has been CougarCast. Hopefully, if you've enjoyed the program, let us know. CougarCast@gmail.com. Give us a rating on iTunes if you've enjoyed this. And anything else, Tosh?
I want to go on record now. We're going to sweep St. Mary's.
Ooh, Poinsettia Bowl next week.
Poinsettia Bowl should be fun. We'll give a Poinsettia Bowl preview.
Thank you for listening to CougarCast. If you enjoyed this show, take the time out to give us a rating on iTunes. Also, look for us on VanquishTheFoe.com. If that isn't enough, you can follow us on Twitter @CougarCast. Enjoy the games and go Cougars!